Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a six-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. We are talking about lung cancer today. We're talking to Dusty Donaldson, 8.5-year lung cancer survivor. I met her last year, the year before, I guess, at the Hope Summit in D.C., put on by Longevity. And she's all fired up today because, government regulations, Affordable Care Act, we're going to talk about how that affects lung cancer survivors. So let's just jump right into it. How are you today, Dusty?
I am great, although, yes, I am fired up for sure. And actually, I mean, this issue might not so much affect lung cancer survivors, but rather the future survivors.
Okay,
we're going to have a lot more future survivors if, if this goes the way we hope, but we've really got to fight for it.
Well, we talked a little bit about the show, but we talked a little bit about it before the show. Explain what you're all fired up about.
Okay, well, if you don't mind, Mel, I'm going to go back just a little bit before we even talk about this thing, just to lay the groundwork about the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, their recommendations that came out December 30th of 2013. Well, these were their final recommendations for screening for lung cancer, and that's the official body, if you will, that insurance companies use to determine whether or not they cover a certain screening. For example, mammograms and colonoscopies and so on.
Right.
So we were, those of us in the lung cancer advocacy community, we were thrilled with this. So what it does is it spells out the guidelines, and there are two basic criteria that folks need to have. One is their age. They need to be 55 or older, and then they also need to have a history of smoking, what they call a 30-pack year history of smoking. Well, a pack year is, like, let's say, for example, someone smokes one pack a day for 30 years. Well, there you have a 30-pack year. But you could also smoke two packs a day for 15 years and have a 30-pack year. So any way you want to slice and dice it, that's how you come up with the number of cigarettes or packs of cigarettes you smoke a day multiplied by the years that you smoke, and that tells you the pack years of your smoking history.
Just to stop you for a second, a lot of lung cancer patients, survivors, have never smoked.
So right now, I'm already
fired up with you, so go ahead.
Okay. So, yes, and I'm glad you brought that out because, we have more than 33,000 Americans every year who will be diagnosed with lung cancer who never put a cigarette between their lips.
Right.
So the screening, unfortunately, does not help them. Nevertheless, we're encouraged for the people that it will help, but there are organizations such as Longevity and other excellent organizations that are working toward finding a non-invasive screening that can be used for not only people who might be considered at risk because of a family history or radon exposure or because of a smoking history, but also the general population. And that's what we would really love to see happen. But
right.
A simple blood test or breath test or something like that. But I'm sorry, we're not there yet. We're just not there.
Why do you think we're not there yet?
Well, because we lack research funding. That's the big reason why. Lung cancer is the number one cancer killer, and yet it's the least funded in terms of federal research dollars. And I think a lot of it has to do with the stigma associated with lung cancer. A lot of people just, whether it's subconscious or not, they just think it's a self-inflicted disease. Think AIDS.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And when I went to my first Hope Summit sponsored by Longevity, I was blown away by I was under that same mindset, too. Not that I would ever ask, did you smoke? But I was under that same mindset, too, that most people who had lung cancer smoked. And we have to start telling people, no, if you have lungs, you can get lung cancer.
That is true. I will confess to you and your audience that I'm guilty of doing that very thing,
mm-hmm.
asking people if they smoked, asking someone, asked a woman, a colleague, if her husband had smoked after she told me he was diagnosed with lung cancer. 1 year later, I was standing in the exact spot, and I was telling somebody else that within an hour before that, I had been diagnosed with lung cancer, and what did they do?
Oh, no.
Asked me that same question. And I thought, what a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, we are working towards, you know, I say we, but like I said, the good organizations are really working towards trying to find a simple, non-invasive test that would be for everyone for early detection, but we're not there yet. And I will also say, you know, no one deserves lung cancer, and
it's
yet,
true.
You know, we also acknowledge that smoking is the number one cause of lung cancer. And but a lot of people are surprised to learn that former smokers, 50% of the new diagnosis this year will be in former smokers, and the majority of them quit smoking 10 years before their diagnosis. So it's really concerning to me when I consider, like myself, I'm a former smoker. I quit smoking 26 years before my own diagnosis, and I thought I was safe. My brother had been diagnosed with colon cancer, and so I was subjected to, and happily, you know, to colonoscopies from the mm-hmm. time I was about 25 years old because I was at high risk. Well, little did I expect that I was still at risk for lung cancer, but, you know, when they said cancer and lung cancer, I'm like, no. If I'm going to get cancer, it's going to be colon cancer. But at any rate, yes, half of the people who will be diagnosed are former smokers. And then there's about 35% who are current smokers who are diagnosed. And like you said, 15% never smoked. So, but now back to the screening guidelines.
Yes.
So the age of 55 or older, and then also a smoking history of a 30-pack year smoking history. Now, Mel, if you don't mind, I'm going to digress slightly because
there are
two kind of standards. One is the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force that we've been talking about. And then the other one was put out by the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. So the USPSTF is more restrictive, we could say. And then the National Comprehensive Cancer Network, theirs is more inclusive, and I like theirs better. But let me just share a little bit about that because
Okay. It's
best standard is the age of 50 and over, and then they reduce it to a 20-pack year smoking history. You still have to have a smoking history, but this is if you have an additional risk factor, which could be, for example, a family member who had a lung cancer diagnosis, a mother, a grandfather, or sister, and or also something like radon exposure. So those are the National Comprehensive Cancer Network's standards. Now, also, I didn't talk about this, but former smokers, I did mention former smokers, but they also qualify for screening if it's been within 15 years from the time they quit smoking.
No, Matt, regardless of age?
No, I mean, in addition to the other two criteria, if they're former smokers and let's say they're 60 years old and they quit smoking 10 years ago, and the amount they smoked, you know, equaled a 30-pack year, then they would qualify, even though they haven't smoked a cigarette. Does that make sense?
It sounds to me like the people on these committees or whatever we want to call them really need to go to a Longevity Hope Summit.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome? Mel, I missed you this year.
I know.
I'm telling you, it gets better every year. And this year was the most amazing gathering of lung cancer survivors. Never have there been so many lung cancer survivors under one roof.
It's amazing.
And it was like one beating heart. I mean, it was so emotional. I mean, we would see friends that we had known from 2-3 years ago.
Yes.
And, you know, that would be like a reunion. And we'd cry for those we lost since the last meeting. And we rejoice when we met new people who we've been communicating with, like through social media.
Yes.
And it's like lung cancer rock stars. And it was just so so exciting and so emotional and so wonderful. The longevity folks, they really know how to do it. And they just treat us like kings and queens. But at any rate, anyone who in your audience who is a lung cancer survivor, I can't encourage you enough to please register next year. They do it usually the first weekend in May, and there are usually travel scholarships. So, you know, especially for first-time attendees.
Oh, yes.
And it's just like a whole new family, and it's And the most wonderful, it's a highlight of my year.
And I don't, you know, I'm terrible at guessing people's ages, but I can tell all of our listeners out there that there were quite a few people who were not of the 55-year-old criteria.
Oh my gosh, you're so right. And my daughter, she went with me this year, and she's 40-ish, but she bonded with some three other lung cancer survivors who are younger than her, and they're either in their 20s or their 30s. I'm not really sure, but very young. And but they had just a blast going up to the Lincoln Memorial and riding a little pedicab and just having fun. But yeah, these young, I say women. Oh, I met a gentleman too. He's in his 20s, and he was just diagnosed with lung cancer this year. So, yes, a lot of young people, a lot more than you would expect, are there. But what a time. What a great time. So maybe you'll come next year. I hope so.
I hope to come. I had surgery. That's why I couldn't really, you know.
Yeah, whatever. I hope you're okay.
No, I'm fine. It was just
good.
One of those things, you know, like we say, cancer never leaves you, and it was basically a side effect of a medication, so hooray. But I'm all good. And that was one of the things I was like, oh, look, the longevity summit is in May, and that was right around the time I was going to be done. So flying on a plane, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do that, but definitely next year, because I did miss it. I was looking at all the everything on Facebook and Twitter and everything, and I was like, oh, I should be there.
We couldn't contain ourselves. We were crazy. We were flooding the, you know, Facebook with photos posts, and it was just wonderful.
But you know, getting back to the guidelines, your daughter technically, since she meets the criteria of being related to you, and therefore her cancer, you know, her
being
possibility
related
of getting
to me is an additional risk factor. Yes,
right.
For all of my children. So somebody who is 50 years old, according to the National Comprehensive Cancer Network's guidelines, 50 years old with a 20-pack year smoking history and an additional risk factor, like I said, radon or family history of lung cancer, then they would qualify for screening. So the Affordable Care Act mandates that all private insurance companies must cover this screening for those who fit those criteria, and a lot of companies are doing it right now. I understand, at least here in North Carolina, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield is, but people don't know about it. They're not aware of it, but those who are getting it covered by insurance, from what I understand. But come January of 2015, they must cover it. So even if they get it gets turned down now, it will be covered in January of 2015.
But that's a long time to wait, though.
Oh, it is, and in fact, I tell you, if you don't want to wait, and if your insurance doesn't cover it, we haven't talked about the Dusty Joy Foundation, but one of the things we've done, especially this past year, because it hadn't been covered by insurance, but you know, the community cancer centers, regional cancer centers, and some of the educational institutions as well, they are developing their lung cancer screening programs, and they understand that, you know, people can't afford to pay whatever, $2,000-$3,000 for a CT scan.
Right.
So they have reduced the cost significantly.
Oh.
And I can't say authoritatively what the average is, but what I've seen, it's maybe around $300.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So it's $300. If your insurance doesn't cover it, that's $300 out of pocket. And Lung Cancer Alliance, they have a list of all the different centers that do screening. So you could go to their website and find a location near you. But what we've also provided matching funds for screening in communities where we serve. And we help screen by providing matching funds 80-some people last year. So we're real proud of that. You know, I'm not sure if any lives were actually saved, but I just hope so. I like to think so. When I put my head on the pillow, I like to think, hey, we might have saved a life today. But at any rate, now let's talk about this Medicare, if you're okay with that.
I'm okay with that, yes. Because,
so,
I mean, a lot of people, I mean, I'm not.
Oh, well, this is what's disturbing.
Well, hang on. I just want to say out there, I'm not against anyone having insurance. I just don't think the way everything that went about it, that the way the government went about it was not the proper way. That's all I'm going to say about it. I'm not going to take a political side.
No, that's quite okay. I don't think anyone really liked the way it was done. Nevertheless, you know, it's what reality today.
Right. And it is helping some people, so we have to be grateful for that.
Yes. And so this is the thing. So the government has, you know, mandated that private insurance companies cover lung cancer screening and other cancer screenings as recommended by the Preventive Services Task Force.
Right.
But they had an advisory, a coverage advisory panel that met 2 weeks ago. And shockingly, their panel, after listening to sound, testimony and reviewing evidence, they recommended against lung cancer screening for seniors on Medicare.
What?
Which, when I know, it just blows my mind, and I am just livid about this. So if I could just share a couple of tidbits. We talked about lung cancer being the number one cancer killer, mm-hmm. the least funded in terms of federal research dollars. It kills more people than breast, colon, prostate, and pancreatic cancers combined, and yet... But listen to these things. Specific to seniors, lung cancer is most frequently diagnosed among people between the ages of 65 and 74.
Oh.
Of course, you know, you get on Medicare when you get 65.
Mm-hmm.
The median age of those diagnosed with lung cancer is 70. More than 150,000 Americans aged 65 and older will be diagnosed with lung cancer this year. Did I say 153,000? That's the number.
I believe so.
And then more than 113,700 seniors will die from lung cancer this year. And the Medicare advisory panel wants to withhold this from their seniors? I mean, this is, I have to bite my tongue to keep from saying some of the words that I want to say, but it's unconscionable at best. It's it does not stand up to any logic or reason.
No, it doesn't. I mean, especially if that's the most diagnosed, why not help them out? Because they don't want to pay. I mean, when this whole I'm going to get on a soapbox here. When this whole insurance thing got underway, I always thought it's like the insurance companies are not the ones you need to go after. It's the pharmaceutical companies, because if you think about it, someone who's cured, they're not going to get any money off of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, insurance, yes, but I'm glad everyone's insured. But I'm, like you said, this whole issue with, like, oh, yeah, let's not insure, let's not give preventative care to the people who need it the most. However, if you don't look at the people who are giving you the medication as well as the insurers, then there's, you know, there's somebody's hands are in somebody's pocket somewhere.
I got to say, I don't agree with you about the pharmaceuticals. They, I have seen such compassionate care coming mm-hmm. out of Big Pharma.
Okay.
It blows my mind the extent that they go through, go to help people to get their medicine, even if it's free. I've seen a lot of that.
Okay.
I've seen them support not all Big Pharma. And others as well. I mean,
right.
You know, the Hope Summit, it's put together by pharma money, and I mean, partly, and we're very thankful for that. However, I'm sorry. I've lost my train of thought. But at any rate, I think that pharma has really done and really continues to do a good service. Now, some of them are exceptions, and I'm not going
right.
to name names, and
right.
I don't even really know the names, to tell you the truth. But I know that some of them are just
I
think they should be
put all, pharmaceutical companies in
right.
one big bucket. I mean, obviously, I don't know the names of things, but you do hear stories of some people saying, "Oh, yeah." You know, I know that there are some good companies, like you said. I know Genentech helps out. I'm not sure if that was one
Absolutely.
Of that was one of the companies that does the Hope Summit,
yes,
which I'm not
they
sure.
They do a lot of work,
but there are some companies where sometimes I just feel that, you know, if you're cured, pharmaceutical companies or, you know, whoever's signing the checks or looking at the bottom line, if you're cured, then they don't make money.
Well, now that you mention it, I remember now what my thought was earlier
mm-hmm.
about
okay.
the pharmaceutical so much, but, and maybe I shouldn't even talk about it because I don't know that much about it, but I do understand that doctors are restricted in, like, they're not allowed to get, let's call it just for you know, simplicity's sake, kickbacks, right?
Right.
Unless they're prescribing chemotherapy drugs, and then it's all legal.
Oh.
They can get their kickbacks. So, yeah, this is troubling to me
that
the doctors get, you know, directly get reimbursed for the chemotherapy that they, maybe it's only certain ones, but chemotherapy that they prescribe. That's troubling. I think that's
troubling.
And meanwhile, the pharmas are restricted from, you know, handing out a pen or giving me some sticky notes to give to people who come to a 5K fundraiser. I mean, it's ludicrous.
It is. And for example, I was on Amend, I believe that was, or whatever it was, one of these anti-emetic drugs. And without insurance, it would be $1,000 for three pills.
Oh, my gosh.
Seriously. With insurance, it was $100. And basically, these pills did nothing for me. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't really give it to the doctor because I don't know if they can actually, like, give it to somebody else. And they whatever company that is, I don't even remember if that was the right one, didn't give free medication to people who couldn't afford it.
Oh.
Now, if your pills are $1,000 for three, I mean, I don't know. I better not be nauseous for, like, the rest of the week. That's all I'm saying.
That's insane. That's just, I mean, yeah, what is in there?
Right, exactly. But, I mean, you know, now we're off our soapbox. But going back to that, I mean, you know, if that's the one thing that works for you, then why can't the doctor be able to give it? Or give it at a discount where it's not cost prohibitive? You know, like your Medicare. How can you not give that to the one part of society that needs it the most for the lung cancer screenings? That makes no sense to me.
The one population group that needs it the most, and I'm not saying to deny it to the others.
Oh,
but
no, not
crying out loud. That's already a given.
As far as statistics go.
I mean, there's so many lives at stake here.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about, you know, 153,000 diagnosed and 114,000 who will die. These are seniors alone.
Right.
Then I didn't mention this, but the according to the screening, the National Lung Screening, I've lost my train
of thought.
But the National Lung Screening Trial that included about 53,000 Americans. 26,000 were put into a group of getting screened by X-ray, and the other half was put into a group that was screened by the low-dose CT scan, which is, you know, the difference between those two groups over a period of years they saw was a 20% increase in the survival rate. So when you're talking about one kind of screening for lung cancer compared to another kind of screening for lung cancer, and there was a 20% increase, imagine what it could be if when you compare it against the standard, which was zero screening for lung cancer. And
exactly.
So there are so many lives at stake here. And I can't imagine that this advisory panel, which is a non-binding recommendation that they made, but I just can't imagine that. I mean, when you hear the word death panel, now I see what they're talking about, because
right.
This would have a direct impact on people's lives, and it tells whether they will live or die. You either give them screening to catch it early. That's why I'm here today, because my lung cancer was early.
Right. And you're very lucky, because a lot of people don't get early. I don't know. Were there a lot of survivors at the Hope Summit that had early screen lung cancer?
No, a few people do have it early, but there were some others there who were caught early.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell people, I don't know if you ever knew Lori Hope, but she was
a
lung cancer survivor for a number of years. And she used to talk about, you know, the number of people in this country who die from lung cancer every day is the equivalent of a Boeing 747 crashing to the ground, packed full of passengers, and not a one survivor walks away. So when you consider that,
wow.
I mean, that's pretty morbid.
That is morbid.
And yet that's a startling fact. But here as a survivor, it's no wonder I feel like I've walked away from that plane crash.
Yes.
And I know I have a calling on my life, and you know, I have survived for a reason. Some people call it survivor's guilt, but I have a reason and a purpose, and that's
mm-hmm.
to educate people about lung cancer. Anyone can get it. Everyone deserves compassion, no matter how they got it, whether they smoked, whether they didn't smoke, whether they had radon or not. Everyone deserves compassion, and equal care and treatment.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, tell me quickly about radon. Like, I know we always hear the PSAs.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Yes.
Radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. And in never smokers, like we were talking about earlier, radon is the number one cause of lung cancer. Mm. So according to the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, more than 20,000 Americans will die this year from radon-induced lung cancer.
That's a nice, so, that's, if you think about that, that's like probably the last concert you went to, 20,000 people.
Well, I tell you, that it, I'll put it in perspective as far as deaths as well, because that is more than we'll die from drunk driving, than we'll die from AIDS in this country, than we'll die from home fires or drowning. And we know about those other risks, but so few people know about radon. Well, it's an odorless, invisible gas that's created by the naturally occurring decomposition of uranium in the soil and the bedrock. It gets, as uranium decomposes, it releases this gas, radon, which is a radioactive gas. We breathe in that that air. It is little minute particles of radioactive matter that embed themselves into our lung tissue over a period of many years. It causes lung cancer. So the EPA has on their website, you could go to epa.gov/radon, R-A-D-O-N, and you can see a map to see, because it's the geology of your area, and you can find out, they classify every county across the entire United States as either yellow, orange, or red, for red being the highest risk for radon. And then you can find out if, you know, if your area is at risk. But I tell you, everyone could and should test their home for radon, because about 1 in 15 homes across the country has a high level of radon.
Wow.
And just not to scare everyone, but yes, it's deadly. I do want to scare you to test. But,
well, yes.
But it's an easy fix, Mel. That's the thing. People just don't know. If you do have a radon problem in your home, it can be fixed by a certified professional in a day usually. And it's
really
going to cost you some money, yes, but it's a it's an improvement to your home. And if you, when you go to sell your home, you're going to, you know, be able to say, my house has been mitigated for radon, and that will increase the value of your home. But you might have to spend maybe $1,000 to get it mitigated. But, hey, that's cheaper than
cheaper than chemo.
Three pills.
Cheaper than three pills, exactly. Exactly. And, yeah, and that's the thing that I never, you know, you don't understand until you meet a lung cancer survivor like yourself or any of the people at the Hope Summit. It's like, well, you still, you, we're trying to get rid of that stigma. Cause like you said, people could have gotten it just by living in their house. Are you going to, are you going to blame them more for having cancer than someone who smoked? I mean, you know, you look at the old ads in the '50s, they had doctors smoking cigarettes. It's
your
doctor likes Lucky Strike or whatever the name of the cigarette is. It's like, what? You know,
well,
I mean, if that's what
again,
you were
about radon, I didn't mention this, but testing is cheap and easy. You can buy a home test kit at like Lowe's, home improvement store, or one of those types of hardware stores for usually under $15, and that includes the lab fee. So. And then they'll email you the lab report right to your house. It's confidential. We, Dusty Joy Foundation, we give away hundreds of radon test kits to folks who live in the high-risk radon areas, and they really seem to appreciate it. And, you know, things are happening in those areas, and I feel like definitely we're saving lives there.
Well, you are. And we got to keep up on these committees that think only 55 and older need tests. And why are we waiting?
That's right.
Why are we waiting? You know, if somebody said you could get cancer between now or a year from now, wouldn't you want to know now? I would.
Yes. Yes.
So why wait? We need to have you go to Washington and crack some skulls up there.
I've been there and I've been cracking some skulls and I'll go back anytime.
Excellent. Well, we're almost out of time. And I need to tell everybody that today, this month is Lung Cancer Hope Month, because I know
that
awesome. Katie would probably slap me if I didn't tell. Katie Brown for lunch. She wouldn't slap me, but she'd give me that look. You know, that look that she gets. So if people want to get a hold of you, and if they have more questions about lung cancer, or if they want to help out raising awareness, where can we get a hold of you?
Well, you can email me. That's fine. Dusty@dustyjoy.org. You can also call me if you'd like, 336-302-7714. I'm happy to answer any questions or get you maybe navigated to the find out about radon or whatever I can do. And, yes, hope. This is Lung Cancer Hope Month, and that's we have so much to be hopeful for now with screening especially and some breakthroughs in research. So things are so much better now than they were 10 years ago. It's day and night, but we still need so much more, so much more.
And we do, and we're just about out of time, so hang on, Dusty. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mal Majoros. I am the Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's the Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.